My friend can help with that.
He nodded, and the two left for the engineering deck. A little thrill went through Rees. No one had ever even listened to what he had to say before, and now, apparently, he had the power to command them, his own people.
Prepare the ship for launch,
he said, stepping into the command role easily. It was not so different than what he had done in countless Academy training exercises, from what he had done on the Luma. Rees considered what he must do now. He saw the next maneuvers as clearly as if they were laid out on a screen before him. He must launch and use this ship to return to Retell. He must fortify the defenses on his planet, train caregivers as soldiers, and he must keep the Maro, and, he now knew, the Koss, from returning. There was a new, sharp edge of hope inside him. The advisors and the scattered remnants of the Trevet's crew, hunched with defeat when he'd entered, now moved with purpose, manning their stations. The navigation console stood empty. Rees turned, but Delta was already moving toward it.
"Have you used one like this?"
he asked. She smiled. "Not exactly, but I can figure it out." The drive made a high whirring. Kataris had gotten it back online. Rees watched out the viewing port as they began to rise. The Maro guards, so casual moments before, now leapt into action. He saw them scrambling, using their communicators, aiming their weapons. The shields were damaged, but working. The fire from the guards' hand weapons bounced off.
"What happened after we took out the Stinger?"
Rees asked, trying to piece together how much of the Trevet was serviceable. As the crew worked around them, Carnot related the tale quickly. The Trevet had been captured when the Luma and the Stinger exploded. The pinwheel had fired its last charge, splitting open the forward hull where the royal family had been hiding. Uwam had rushed from the command deck to save them and been sucked into the cold blackness of space. The pinwheel was too crippled to finish off the royal transport, but had caught the ship in a drag beam, towing the defenseless craft to Maro. The Trevet trembled around them as it accelerated to overcome the planet's gravity. Rees was struck with how innocuous Maro looked from here. Outside the main base where they had been were rolling hills and fields, painting the planet with a natural beauty inconsistent with all he knew of the war-loving Maro race. The base itself was nearly abandoned. Kataris' testimony of the decimation of the Maro fleet was obvious in the few soldiers rushing out of the buildings to witness their escape, in the few vessels Rees could see spotting the all-but-abandoned shipyard that had once stood in service to their vast fleet. The Maro were in no shape to pursue. He hoped he would have time to prepare Retell for them, to build his people's own military, before the Koss could attempt to finish the job they'd started.
"Problem ahead," Delta called.
Rees looked to see a single light attack ship moving to intercept, all the depleted Maro fleet could muster. Remove it, and nothing stood between him and home. He studied the attack craft, smiling at its orientation, aft ports exposed.
"Gunner!"
he barked, and a small Retell answered.
"Sir?" "Fire a heavy charge,"
Rees instructed,
"right between those tracking ports." "We don't have many charges,"
the gunner said doubtfully.
"We only need one."
Rees tapped the screen to show the gunner where to aim, and watched as the charge erased the craft from his screen. He smiled faintly. Rees watched Maro shrink into the velvet darkness. Sound slowed and sped at varying intervals as the Trevet moved into a warp. He held his breath, but it was a long warp, and his discomfort grew. He slid a hand into his pocket and pulled out the device Kataris had given him, then fitted over his nose. It was soft and comfortable, and as he inhaled through it, he sighed with relief. Rees drew in air as quickly as he could without drawing attention, recognizing that Kataris's knowledge may continue to prove useful. The new king breathed easy when the ship slowed again, and he saw the pale, spinning orb that was Retell. "Home?" Delta asked, tapping the planet on her display.
"Home,"
he answered softly. For the first time, he felt like that was an accurate description of the planet. Carnot moved up beside him, the old Retell's thoughtful gaze resting on Delta.
You've brought another,
the advisor said, inclining his head toward the girl.
Another?
Rhys turned his gaze to Carnat.
Another what?
At this, the advisor peered at him.
You did not read the letter your cousin gave you? The letter from the broken one?
He stopped and looked down, seemingly embarrassed.
Forgive me. The letter from your father? I started to, but we were called to arms.
Rhys reached into his pocket and extracted the delicate paper. As the ship moved down through the atmosphere, the new king read the second page at last. Your mother left the throne to use her considerable talents for gathering information. She knew how to lead. She knew how to rule. She came to the academy to learn what they had never taught her at the palace, how to fight for her people. She knew there were threats, and she could not bear to sit in the palace while the dangers encircled her planet. We met at the academy. She chose me for her personal pilot. She said she felt safe with me. I wish I could have lived up to that vision. We traveled to covert bases and to dens of spies. Along the way, I fell in love with her intelligence and bravery, her fierce sense of loyalty to all of her subjects. We were married on an Edenic planet in a system whose name I can't even pronounce. After our marriage, with you on the way, we carried on trying to find out the extent of the threats our people were truly facing. What we found instead was truth of another kind. We returned to Rattel for your birth. We returned with precious little information, but planned to leave again, taking you with us. But the attacks on Rattel began, and your mother was killed, and everything changed. Before our discoveries in the field, I had thought, son, that her superior genes would overpower mine, that you would not have the limitations I had. But out in the field we discovered something, something only Carnat knows, that you can't reveal to anyone else. We learned of another race, not unlike the Rattel, whose own world had been lost to them. We found that they had sent their young into the skies in hopes that they would find a better future. We found, son, that I was not a broken Rattel. In fact, I was a typical specimen of this other race, one of those orphans sent among the stars. It is, I suppose, why my body is at the end of its usefulness to me. These were not the conditions it was made for, and it cannot continue to function in them. In the future, perhaps you will meet the race from which I came, or perhaps you will not. But now, as I leave my body behind, I realize that I have tried so hard to allow you to be a Rattel, to shine as your mother did in this society, that I have neglected to teach you about your other ancestors. I know precious little of them myself, but I should not have kept what little I know from you. What followed was a list of all the things he knew of this strange race. They were from a rich blue planet in the Sol system. They breathed best in an atmosphere of about 20% oxygen. They were remarkably adaptable. Rhys glanced up at Delta. She was like him. He wondered if she knew what she was, where she had come from. There would be, he felt, a time to discuss it. There would be time for many things. Rhys would see to that. He would prepare his world to fight, and he would call upon his new relatives for help if they could be found. As the ship touched down on the stubby green shrubs outside the Rattelian royal palace, Rhys ran his strange fifth finger over the last line of the letter, just above his father's signature.
Forgive me if you can, and remember, please, that your mother did her best, and that I was only human.
The Erkennen Job by Chris Porto. The Contract. Tony 2.0 sat back in his chair and stared across the expanse of his English oak desk. I could see how much he favored his father when he did that. Same iron jawline, same bony temple. Like someone had pulled an exoskeleton off a Martian assembly line and stretched skin over it. When he's angry, Tony's forehead ripples like liquid metal.
It's a power play, pure and simple, his voice rumbled in the back of his throat. Rauf Erkennen is making a move.
Why not keep the marshals on the case? I asked. Seemed like a perfect job for the Marshals Service, that bastion of law and order bought and paid for by the Syndicate Corporation. Like everything else in the solar system. Tony shook his head.
When we thought Blaylock had simply stolen tech, the Marshals were fine. Now that we know Raouf is up to something... No. This secret lab in Darkseid needs to stay a secret as far as the public is concerned. We need to handle this privately.
I nodded. By we, he meant me. Stax Fisher, chief enforcer for SynCorp, and Tony's personal assassin. The Erkennan faction had first reported that a scientist named Mason Blaylock had committed corporate espionage and stolen research and dashed to Darkseid with it. That's why the Marshals went in. Now we knew the situation wasn't so simple, thanks to a whistleblower inside the Erkennan organization. Blaylock was conducting secret research meant to upset the delicate, nuanced relationship of SynCorp's five factions. And meant to put the Erkennans at the top of the totem pole. What's this super-secret tech again? Tony had to look to remind himself.
Molecularly enhanced synthetic hemp, he said, each word deliberately.
Developing a new drug in Darkseid, I grunted. Now there's a shocker. Tony shrugged.
My little bird inside Erkennan tells me it's a game-changer. Raouf plans to use the new strain of hemp to take over, he said,
stroking the plush arms of his leather chair. Using drugs as a weapon? Tony shrugged again.
How he plans to do it, I have no idea. But the fact that Raouf is working offline is already a violation of the corporate compact.
That was true enough. But each of the five factions maneuvered against the others all the time. This particular power play seemed to have Tony especially on edge.
We need to set an example, Eugene.
Tony gave me the unblinking eye, the look he reserves for his inner circle when he's passing along privileged company knowledge, or trying to intimidate the other guy. I reckon so, I said. But I wanted to be crystal clear on expectations. You want me to bring Blaylock back? Tony's eyes went ice cold, ice blue cold, like his power core had just shut down, if he'd had a power core.
Kill the geek. Take the tech.
I stood. I'll head out post-haste, boss. How hard could it be to find one rogue scientist making new and improved pipeweed and Darkseid?
One more thing. Raouf Erkennan needs to be taught a lesson.
Tony's words were gravel in a grinder.
Make it loud and clear.
I'll get it done, boss.
I have every confidence, Eugene, he said with a wolfish smile.
Tony's bone structure made the expression seem painted on again, like an undertaker had pinned his skin back to force a peaceful repose for respectful mourners.
Good hunting.
I thought about stopping by the Slate, my favorite watering hole on the orbiting station that served as SynCorp's headquarters, and pump Mickey Stoats, the proprietor, for information. But I figured whatever the Erkennans were playing at with Blaylock was still far enough off-grid that even Mickey, usually a fount of useful information, wouldn't know anything. If not for Tony's secret sources inside the Erkennan faction, neither would we. So I headed dockside, and my ride waiting there. From Tony's penthouse office in SCHQ, the Vader ride down to the deck where the parking's cheap always takes a while. I don't mind. Gives me time to think. Make sure I know what I think I know. He's smart, Tony. Street smart, unlike his father, Anthony Talkie, who was a brilliant engineer and world builder, but not so smart when it came to managing people. Tony must have gotten his people skills from Mama. As SynCorp's CEO and head of the Talkie faction, he's a master at keeping the other four factions off balance, and everyone toiling toward the company's bottom line. Maintaining the status quo means everyone wins. That's what made this move by the Erkennan faction even more odd. The Erkennans developed tech for the company, That was their main contribution, but apparently Rauf Erkennen had decided to conduct this particular project off-book. He was risking a lot taking on Tony. As the decks flashed by, I pulled my left bicep against my side to find the comforting curve of my stunner in its holster. Comforting, yes, but stunners are new tech, only out a few years, and I don't trust them. That's why I carry backups. Strapped to my right wrist, my knife in a spring launcher. Inside my left ankle, my .38, what they used to call a police special a couple hundred years ago. The knife and the pistol were my old reliables. Given what Tony wanted done, the stunner might be too humane anyway. The stunner tech, which I still didn't really understand, somehow causes a living being's EM field to shock them to death. It's a quick and supposedly painless way to go, and it requires less mopping up afterward. But sometimes in this business you want to make a mess. The 38 would leave a weeping hole for everyone to gape at on CorpNet. I'd just have to make sure the wound was visible to make Tony's point for him. Taking on Tony Talkie is no Sunday afternoon stroll with the family. It always has real consequences. Deadly consequences. With that in mind, I walked off the Vader, appreciating Rauf Erkennen's testicular fortitude. One quick valet delivery later, and I was back in the hearse's cockpit. There are few places I feel safer. She's a fast, sleek little ship with black and silver lines and an oversized trunk for, well, you know, cargo. The hearse, I named her myself, exchanged bona fides with SynCorp control, and we were on our way to the moon and its main colony, Darkseid. It'd be a few hours before I got there, so I went over the briefing from Tony again in my head. The Erkennen faction at first said that Mason Blaylock, one of their own scientists, had stolen groundbreaking tech, maybe to hand over to the Resistance, called ghosts because their favorite way to resist is to gum up the works of the corporate machinery. Ghosts say they're fighting for mankind's freedom from the indentured servitude of life under SynCorp. But most of Sol's citizens are perfectly happy to let the company run their lives. It wasn't 40 years ago we all thought we'd expire right along with what was left of Earth. Then the corporations came along and saved us, colonized Mars, developed Titan's resources. So who can blame the citizenry if they trade a little freedom for survival of the species? When the ghosts sabotage the assembly lines or blow up company assets, well, it strikes me as damned ungrateful. When it looked like just another corporate espionage job by Blaylock, SynCorp had dispatched the Marshals Service to set things right. But you only engage the Marshals when you want the law enforced and the citizenry to see you've enforced it. When you need a message sent that's a little more direct, like to big bald Rauf Erkennen, keen on taking Tony's job, well, that's where I come in. I let myself relax a little and looked up through the hearse's canopy. I was finally away from the bright blue marble and the dark silver of the stars shone in. Other than the getting paid part, this was my favorite part of the job. Traveling alone in the hearse, carefully planning my next steps. I still had hours to Darkseid. With the starlight streaming in and my racing thoughts finally starting to calm, I pulled up the hearse's reading library. This was my thing to do while I waited on the flight time. Waiting is 90% of my job. Some assassins play games on their pads, some eat ravenously, mechanically. Some drink, but not too much. None dare to sleep if they want to stay alive. Me, I like to read books. That's where I get my nickname from, by the way, my love for reading stacks of books. What, you thought it referred to how many bodies I've piled up in my career? I pulled up Mickey Spillane. He'd do. The Investigation. Founded as Darkseid's End, the largest settlement on the moon had once been the hope of humanity. It was supposed to be the first giant footprint for mankind off a dying planet, a springboard to a second chance among the stars. Then everything went to shit on Earth even faster than the experts predicted. Instead of a shining city on a lunar hill, the moon became a way station where people stopped off on their way to more important places, like Mars. I remember a line from some old vid, a wretched hive of scum and villainy. Yeah, that describes Darkseid perfectly. Yeah, that's what everyone calls it now. No end in sight. Once I landed, I headed for the fleshway, a long dirty bazaar of overpriced drinkeries and brothels and peopled by pickpockets. If Blaylock really was in Darkseid, that's where I'd most likely find him, indulging in the local diversions. The fleshway is so-called not only for peddling access to everyone's favorite 15 minutes of the day, but also because foot traffic is so thick on the bazaar, it's hard not to stick your fingers in other people's pockets. The smell of sweat, vomit, and other bodily fluids wafted up from the gray mud of the double-wide prefabricated thoroughfare. The sounds of drunkards, hucksters, and a slurred desire for death sooner rather than later mixed in the murmur of the crowd. I pushed my way through, heading for Minerva Set's Arms of Artemis. The Arms is considered the best little whorehouse in Darkseid, which isn't saying much for the place. The owner, Minerva, a.k.a. Minnie the Mouth, and I were old friends. Whenever I prowled Darkseid on a job, I'd stop in for a scotch and a beer and sometimes help her muscle out a drunk John demanding more than he'd paid for. Though she never paid me for the service, Minnie was always grateful for my assistance, if you know what I mean. I pulled my hat down when I entered the Arms. Last thing I needed was someone spotting me and tipping off anyone watching Blaylock's back. I spotted Minnie holding court and angled in her direction. When she saw me, I jerked my thumb toward her office behind the bar. She nodded and began to wind down her conversation with the client she'd been chatting up. Entering her office felt like slipping into an old coat. "This place looks the same," I said after she closed the door behind her. The fake friendliness of the negotiations underway in the front parlor, as Minnie called it, faded to a dull roar. "It's what I like about it."
"You and everyone else," Minnie said, amused. "My customers like to know what they're getting each and every time."
I turned with a grin and noticed her absently wiping her lower lip. They don't call her Minnie the Mouth for nothing. Actually, for two things. I was here for the second. "I need information," I said.
"Yeah, and Mars has two moons."
Minnie strolled over to her desk with lazy legs that knew a paying customer wasn't watching. She kicked off her heels and flopped into a chair.
"You know, you never come to visit when you don't need something. Not even a, 'How you doing, Minnie? Business been good, Minnie?' first."
"No time for pleasantries. I need what I need and I'll beat feet out of here." She blew out her disgust.
"Typical male. What is it this time? Someone steal something from Tony 2.0? Make the big boss man mad, did they?"
"Maybe it's because every job I do is basically the same, or maybe it's because, after celebrating her 5th 39th birthday, Minnie has a lifetime of hard-earned experience in reading people, but sometimes she hits the nail too squarely on the head for her own good. Someday it might get her killed." I decided not to add to those odds today. "I can't tell you the what, I just need help finding the who."
"You know, fun, Stax."
"That's not what you said last time I was here."
"I owed you, for running those twin thugs out before they hurt another one of my girls."
"I remember."
"I felt I owed you big time."
"I remember. You delivered, too." She smiled.
"Yeah, I did."
"Does that shared reminiscence count as a pleasantry?"
"That particular one?"
Minnie gazed off and closed her eyes for a moment.
"Yeah. That counts."
She reached across her desk and pulled the top off a decanter.
"How much of a hurry are you in?"
"One drink's worth of a hurry." Minnie filled two glasses with amber ambrosia and pushed one in my direction. I picked it up and said, saluting, "Bottoms up." She saluted back.
"If that's the way you want it."
That woman doesn't miss a beat. She downed the bourbon in one gulp. I followed suit out of courtesy. "What I prefer is scotch."
"I prefer girls, and see where that's gotten me."
That plussed my non for half a second.
Minnie was diverting me, as was her wont. I set my glass down and said, I'm looking for a man named Blaylock. Mason Blaylock, ring a bell? Ignoring my pressing schedule, Minnie poured us a second round. I let mine breathe. She didn't.
The EF geek that stole the super-secret tech?
Shit, Minnie, you live a dangerous life. And I'm not talking about the daily need for antibiotics. My silence answered her question.
I heard the marshals were hot on his trail,
she said, still fishing. Where'd you hear that?
Whispers in the basement.
Ah, the basement. That second tier below the sanitized top layer of CorpNet, where only those who pay to play can get access. Taboo porn and SynCorp stock tips are the most popular search returns, and something called The Real Story, a series of non-stop real-time videos streaming the most recent rubbernecking eye bait. Whatever puerile happening will get viewers to tune in for the flash ads that pop up in between. The company considers what shows up in the basement as a safety valve for public angst. Sometimes SynCorp even seeds content to push public commentary in a certain direction. When things get a little too close to the truth, plugs get pulled. And I'm talking more than power plugs. Don't believe everything you hear, I said.
Honey, I don't believe half of what I hear and less than half of what I see. It's the only way to keep your sanity in a place like this.
She finished off her second bourbon, then chuckling.
And your sense of humor.
I nodded. I could relate. My line of work demanded a similar indulgence of the darker side of human nature. Anyway, Blaylock, if all you know is what's in the basement. Minnie poured herself a third drink. Either it was the end of her shift or the beginning. Hard to know which one she'd need the liquid meds for more.
Don't insult me,
she said.
Do I question your professionalism?
She watched me slowly shake my head over the rim of her empty glass. Sometimes I'm smart and keep my trap shut despite my knee-jerk tendency to mouth off. There were only the distant sounds of loud-mouthed braggarts and half-hearted gigglers bubbling in from the bar.
Oh, hell, Stax,
she said finally, the bourbon already making her S's lazy. Beginning of shift, I guessed. Minnie prefers to work on an empty stomach.
I'm sorry, it's just that—
Don't mention it. Now, about Blaylock? Minnie's a good kid, and I didn't want to be rude, but I really was in a hurry. I had no idea what Rauf Erkanen's timetable might be, but with the marshals called off, he might advance his schedule to move against the Talkie faction. However, that shook out, Tony was convinced it'd be in the public space, and it was real hard to put a bad news genie like that back in the bottle. Any evidence of open warfare among the factions would only encourage the resistance. The sooner I completed my contract, the better.
I hear he's gone way deep,
she said, kicking into business mode. The slums?
Deeper.
Lower London?
Uh-huh. You gonna drink that?
She motioned toward my still-waiting glass. Help yourself. I thought how that made sense. Lower London, wholly underground beneath Darkseid proper. Originally built as sustainable housing by some Englishman and his millions. Now, like the rest of Darkseid, it was a bleaker reality of its promised potential. Most people just called it the sewer because, well, shit runs downhill, even on the moon. If you wanted to lose yourself among the refuse who populated Darkseid, Lower London would be the best place to do it. No one stepped into the sewer, whoever wanted to come out again. Minnie sipped her fourth dose of medicine and said,
The marshals were prepping for a raid on the down below when someone called off the dogs, though I hear all the hounds haven't stopped baying yet.
That woke me out of my pre-loathing about having to tromp through the sewer. What do you mean? She set her glass down. Her eyes lost focus for a tick, then set hard again.
I mean that sometimes a badger remembers why they're supposed to be wearing the star. Not everyone clocks in and out when the company tells them to.
A true bluer? Minnie nodded, her eyes blurring again. 9 out of 10 marshals were just deputized muscle for the company. Petty crime and enforcement of SynCorp law fell to them,
And most of the time, they did their job like you'd expect. Seeing that five-pointed star on a uniformed chest comforted the citizens of Seoul, made them feel like some part of their old life on Earth really had made it to the stars with them. In reality, most marshals were on the take, either looking the other way during business hours or moonlighting as hired help for one faction or another. But every once in a while, someone wore the star who actually did care. About their job. About justice. I hate those guys. They make my work more complicated. SynCorp and even the Marshals Service itself didn't suffer them lightly. Being a straight shooter in a crooked game is the fastest way to feel the final embrace of Mother Universe. You telling me some true bluer is still bird-dogging Blaylock? Even after Tony passed the word? I shut my mouth and glanced down at my empty glass. God damn it, Minnie's good. Good at getting information out of schmucks like me. Information that can get her killed. Minnie was smiling with her perfect mouth.
Now, Stax, you used to be smarter than that.
She gave a lazy wink that had she been less drunk and 20 years younger. And you're too damn smart for your own good, I growled. That's all you're getting out of me tonight, Minerva. Got a name on the marshal? Her smile faded at my use of her given name.
Just a last one,
she said, rising slowly from the chair. She was irritated. The bourbon had made her playful, and I wouldn't play.
Darrow.
Darrow, got it. Any idea where Minnie had walked around the desk, and now she leaned into me. She placed one hand on my shoulder to hold herself up. The other found my inseam.
Why not stay a while?
She asked. I told you, I said, the blood rushing south out of my resolve. I've got business.
Oh, I can feel that.
Minnie, where can I... I cleared my throat. Where can I find this Marshal Darrow? Her fingers stopped measuring me for a new pair of trousers.
You know fun, you know that?
I stood up abruptly, so fast it set her back on her wobbly heels. I grabbed her with a soft hand to keep her on her feet. Not tonight, I'm not. Can you clue me in?
Sure, Einstein. I'd start with the Marshal's outpost in the sewer,
she said, petulant and pouting. Minnie always seemed less the hard-boiled madam and more the mean little girl when she was drunk.
Like I said, they were ready to raid when Tony Talkie called them off.
Thanks. Rising, I headed for the door.
Hey, Stax,
she said behind me. Turning, I watched her pick up the decanter of bourbon again. Yeah?
Stop back on your way out of Darkside?
I paused. Doubtful, Tony would want a first-hand report tout de suite, and in person. No way for the communication to be tapped if I reported in person. The decanter clinked and clanked against the rim of her glass. I watched bourbon slop onto the desk.
I keep getting stiffed by customers lately, and I don't mean in a good way,
she said, adding a leer like drinkers do when they think the person they're talking to is as dull as they are drunk.
Now, when you stiff me...
I'll try to stop by, I said to stop her talking. I like Minnie. I like her a lot. We're two peas in a pathetic pod. Only I kill people for a living. She just screws them. Thanks for the info, Minnie. I beat feet before my sympathy for an old drunk whore made me decide to stay. If the uptop of Darkside smells like humanity overripe and underfed, the sewer smells worse. SynCorp doesn't much care whether the artificial gravity works reliably on the moon, and that plays havoc with the waste reclamation located in the down below. The corridors of Lower London, more narrow than up top, slosh now and then with gray filth when you walk. Lower London is like its namesake in older times, I guess, minus the frilly Shakespeare clothes. More like a toll booth than an outpost, the Marshall's station was easy to find. It has a sign over the door. It's the brightest thing in the sewer as you come off the ramp, so you can't miss it. I hiked my collar and lowered my hat when I got close. I'm looking for the deputy in charge, I said to the grizzled 20-something on duty. Dark figures passed within the alcoves along the main corridor leading deeper into Lower London. Their feet stirred up the smell of the sludge around me. If I weren't armed to the teeth, I'd be concerned about the element I was stepping into, and I don't just mean the shit slurry on the ground.
"That'd be me,"
the grizzled 20-something said. He didn't bother to look up from his pad. The way his thumb was moving, I figured he must be either about to win the game he was playing or about to lose it. "No, I mean really in charge. Someone in command down here." The sound effects of defeat spun out of his pad. Losing, then. Cursing, the unshaven whelp of a lawman looked up.
"Name's Mustafar, and like I said, if you need a marshal, I'm the guy. You think they'd put a veteran with reputation down this shithole?"
"Fair point. Deputy Mustafar, then." I looked around. "Is there some place we can have a private conversation?" Mustafar gestured at the barely man-sized booth around him.
"I'd offer you my office, but it's a little cramped. Now what do you want? I'm busy."
I glanced at his pad, but held my tongue. "I was just wondering if Deputy Darrow was around." His expression flattened. He wasn't much interested in playing games anymore, that's for sure.
"What do you want with Darrow?"
He gave me a curious eye.
"Do I know you?"
"Don't think so. Darrow and I, old friends, mutual acquaintance, told me he was assigned down here, thought I'd..."
"Old friends, huh?"
"Yeah."
"Well, she, Deputy Darrow, is unavailable."
Shit. And I'd had a 50-50 chance of getting that right, too. Ah, well. Sometimes the best thing to do when caught in a lie is to own it with a smile. I crossed my arms, an old trick just in case I needed to draw, and smiled. "Hey, friend, you got me. I was just..."
"What do you want with Darrow?"
he asked again. I watched him shift his weight to the right. I imagined him pressing a button under the lip of the counter in front of him. Seemed like his suspicion had touched on a memory.
"Do I know you?"
My options were suddenly very limited, but killing a marshal, even in the sewer, might blow back on Tony in the court of public opinion. Could even help Rauf Erkennen with his plan to take over. "You know what?" I said, backing away. "I think I'll look for old Darrow myself. Sorry to have interrupted your game."
"Hey, I do know you. Stop right there."
Double shit, out of options.
"You're Fisher, Talkie's assassin."
Mustafar fumbled beneath the counter. I pulled my stunner. My eyes were on him, but at the same moment I felt a shadow moving with purpose behind me. I hesitated on the trigger, and everything went real dark, real fast. The Twist. Waking up after being clocked from behind is a tricky thing. If you've got your wits, you do it slowly to get the lay of the land before whoever put your lights out realizes you're awake.
"You can open your eyes,"
a woman's voice.
"Go on, Fisher, I know you're awake."
Well, no need to play possum, then. I raised my head off my chest and felt a spider's web of pain shoot across the back of my skull. She'd cold-cocked me good, all right. "Deputy Marshal True Blue Darrow, I assume?" I blinked away the blackout and took her in through the orange spots. She was slight for a marshal, almost comically so, though her size emphasized a kind of fierce beauty. The badge over her left breast hung like an oversized star on the too small canvas of her uniform.
"And you're Stax Fisher, Tony Talkie's assassin to the stars."
The orange spots had finally cleared out. "Since you know who I am, you know this little tussle can permanently direct the course of your career. Cut me loose and let me walk out of here, and I'll forget it ever happened." Darrow thrust her hips to one side and crossed her arms.
"Do I look stupid to you?"
"I try never to judge on first appearances."
"Funny."
I sat up, slowly, and rested against the wall. The room we were in had a film of something slimy on the floor. The seat of my pants felt soaked. Darrow had bound my feet, but that was all. I must have woken up too fast for her to finish tying me up.
"Maybe we should just space him, Glau."
I turned my head and found Mustafar standing there. He looked every bit the 10 years younger than Darrow he was. Seeing them together, I sized up the situation real quick. Deputy Marshal Mustafar was into older women.
Quiet, I mean, Darrow said.
Then, looking at me,
never tell the criminal element your plans.
I laughed, but the mirth was short-lived. The lump on the back of my head reminded me I wasn't in a laughing mood. You're not going to kill me, I said. Darrow cocked an eyebrow. She was good at the body language thing. Being short had helped her develop other necessary survival skills.
Don't be so sure, she said.
Oh, I'm 100% sure. I stared at her straight. For one thing, I woke up. If you wanted me dead, I'd be that way by now. Second, you're smart enough to know you can't kill me and get away with it. Tony would put you in a decompression chamber and reduce the PSI for a week until your eyeballs finally exploded. Third, you're not a killer, I said, with a knowing look at her boyfriend, Deputy Big Mouth. Damn. Darrow's ears had been distracted by my little speech, but her eyes had noticed my right hand, flexing.
Looking for the knife?
She moved aside, and there, lined up on a table behind her, were my three insurance policies. My stunner, my 38, and my spring blade. Not anymore.
Let's just space him. No one will shut up, Amin.
Darrow's voice was short and spoke of a growing irritation with her puppy dog lover. At the look Mustafar gave her, Darrow's face melted into quick regret. She was in new territory, having me as a prisoner. Life was getting more stressful by the minute.
Look, just go back out to the booth and keep watch, okay? Before Central notices you're gone? Fine, he said.
Then,
I've put everything on the line for you, Glau. I know. Don't fuck this up. I know.
Mustafar threw a last leer my way, to which I puckered up and blew him a kiss. His look of disgust made its exit with the rest of him. I guess it wasn't out that long, then, I said. Even in the sewer, an empty marshal's station would get noticed.
No.
Why didn't you kill me? Roles reversed, I would have done for you. The look she gave me was pure hatred, like I was a cockroach that had just crawled into her dead mother's mouth as she lay in the coffin.
I'm sure you would. Maybe I'll kill you anyway.
I laughed again. A true bluer like you? There's no justice in cold-blooded murder.
You should know.
I let her have her moment of smug satisfaction. But anyway, let me go and we'll forget this ever happened.
So you can kill me? Fat chance.
Kill you? I have no intention of killing you. I'm here to fix a problem, that's all.
Uh-huh.
I took a moment to collect my thoughts. Darrow's perspective on the puzzle fell into place fast. The top assassin in SynCorp steps into the sewer asking after Deputy Marshal Glau Darrow, who's bucked the company's directive to back off Blaylock. In her mind, I was here to fix a problem, all right. Her. You think I'm here for you?
I don't think anything, she said.
I'm not.
Uh-huh.
I'm here for Blaylock. I could have played coy, but Darrow struck me as too sharp to buy whatever I'd come up with. We're here for the same reason, really. She paused to consider.
If you're here, it's because Tony Talkie wants Blaylock dead. I'm here to take him in for corporate espionage. Those aren't the same reason.
You were told to stand down. That made her eyes drop for half a heartbeat. They came back up with flames in them.
I'm so tired of that crap, she said. We're sworn to uphold the law.
Corporate law. Watch it, Fisher, stay out of the pulpit.
Yes, corporate law.
Darrow started pacing.
And half the time, just like with Blaylock, we're denied our duty because Tony Talkie or some other faction leader decides they're above the law.
Look, kid, I said, you know how this plays out. You're already in seven kinds of trouble, but the situation's still salvageable. I might even be able to help you out of the jam you're in. Her eyes narrowed.
Why would you help me?
Good question. Darrow was nothing to me except a potential headache with Tony. But, cold cocking notwithstanding, I liked her grit. She was bucking her orders to bring in a criminal just for the sake of serving the law. We might walk opposite sides of that legal street, but I could admire her dedication to duty. We were more alike than she'd cop to. No pun intended. Young love sets my heart aflutter, I said by way of explanation. Her forehead wrinkled as she translated.
Amin? You think I'm in love with Amin?
I think he's in love with you. Your little crusade is gonna get him killed. You too.
Crusade? I'm doing my job!
I was tempted to shout, tempted to rail at the stupidity of Darrow's idealism, but I really was starting to like her. Maybe because she was such an idealist. Quietly, without venom, I said, Your job is what the company tells you it is.
My job is to enforce the law.
SynCorp is the law. Darrow's eyes flared again, but her mouth shut up. There's more going on here than you know, I continued. Blaylock will never be taken alive, whether it's me or someone else that does him. He'll get done. That's why Tony sent the marshals home, to make sure Blaylock is taken care of permanently.
What is it?
She sounded almost desperate to know.
What is going on?
Like knowing might somehow justify, literally, why she couldn't do her job. Like knowing would give her permission to let Blaylock get spaced, to turn a blind eye. Can't tell you that, I said. It'd only make you more of a target than you already are. Darrow advanced, ready to get the story out of me one way or the other. Then angry voices filtered in from outside. One of them was Mustafar's. He was doing his I'm the marshal you're looking for bit. I could tell in an instant it wouldn't be enough. Cut my feet free, I growled. Now! She looked from me to my weapons on the table behind her, then toward the doorway and the ruckus outside. Mustafar's defiance had begun to lose its authority. And from the sound of it, he was outnumbered. Darrow! But she was already moving for the door, drawing her stunner. With her offhand, without looking back, she snagged my knife from the table and shot it in my direction. I ducked as it thunked into the wall behind me. Before her shadow left the room, I could hear the sharp, potent punk, punk, punk of stunner fire outside. Those marshals were both as good as dead. I didn't know who the loudmouths were, but Mustafar must have drawn on them like he drew on me, and they'd responded in kind. I yanked the knife from the wall and cut the rope binding my feet. As I levered myself up, my ankles screamed in protest. I'd been sitting too long. Fuck being over 50. I flicked the knife back under my wrist, spring-loaded. Blood began to fill my feet again, and I loped to the table. I filled both hands, one with my stunner and the other with the 38. I had no intention of getting involved, not really, and maybe I could just sit here and wait it out and steal away after the marshals were dead. Punk, punk, punk. Punk, punk. But if I waited and the new players weren't friends, they'd be after me next. With all that shooting outside, I figured there must be at least a handful of them. Not good odds when you're cornered in a bare room with no cover. If I joined Darrow and Mustafar, I'd at least have them on my side. The enemy of my enemy and all that. Better odds. Killing the lights inside the little room, I knelt beside the doorway and darted my eyes around the corner to get my bearings. I was across the dark alleyway from Mustafar's outpost in the same alcove Darrow must have jumped me from earlier. I spotted her behind a long, thin dumpster farther up the narrow alley. She was pinned down by fire coming from the near side. There was no sign of Mustafar. Two of the shooters advancing on Darrow were crouched and moving from trash can to doorway. A third semi-strode down the middle of the alleyway like an Old West gunslinger. Idiot. I could flank them. They'd never see me coming, like I hadn't seen Darrow. Or, I reminded myself, I could just melt into the wall and go my own way.
Firing on members of the Marshal's service is a capital crime. Cease and desist and throw down your weapons.
It was Darrow reading from the Marshal's manual again. I wonder if she really thought they'd obey her order, or if she was just quoting herself some bravery. Punk, punk, punk. Their answer kept Darrow's head down. To drive the point home, a fourth shooter engaged from the Marshal's booth. So, these guys weren't dicking around. Mustafar must be dead. In a few seconds, one of the three gunslingers would draw a bead on Darrow. The closer they got to finishing that job, the clearer they made my escape route. Sorry, Darrow. You were a good kid. At least she'd die true to the principles she'd lived by. I edged out of the doorway, my knees joining my ankles' chorus of complaints. I crept along the wall, Darrow's defiance hurling the scripture of the law like bullets at the bad guys behind me. But as I passed the fourth shooter, the one in the booth, I finally registered something. Like the three moving in on Darrow, he was wearing corporate blue coveralls, the kind factory workers on Mars wear. But we weren't on Mars.
Punk, punk!
Those coveralls also happened to be the de facto uniform of the resistance, since most of the movement's ghosts came from the worker class. Why were they in Darkseid shooting at, make that, killing, marshals at the same time the shit with her cannon was going down? I needed to know the answer to that question. Coincidence is too coincidental for my tastes. I turned first on the one in the booth. He still hadn't seen me and was being cavalier about his cover. My stunner showed him the virtue of awareness. The others were too distracted by their target to notice me killing their buddy.
Punk, 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 punk.
Only their buddy in the booth wasn't dead. I'd shot him point blank, and all it did was make him mad. My stunner had fired, but to no effect. Fuck, never trust a new tech. He turned on me, drawing a bead. Good thing I had my .38 in my other hand. The slug took him high in the chest, knocking him off his feet. If I hadn't been in a hurry, I'd have kissed my old reliable. The report from my pistol got the attention of the other three. Before the first mook turned, I shot him in the back. The second had spun and crouched, and I flattened on my stomach in the muck. Her stunner fired fine, but missed its mark. My .38 didn't. I watched Darrow take aim at the third guy and shoot him point blank. Like the one in the booth, he seemed to shrug it off and turned on her. I did for him like the others, splitting his spine with a little old-fashioned lead. As the three dead bodies settled into the sludge, silence was a strange sound after all that killing. Darrow darted forward from her hiding place, running past me. "You're welcome," I said to her wind. The Alliance.
Amin!
I could hear the anguish in her voice. I left her to it. I was more interested in the corpses at my feet anyway, and why my stunner had misfired. Blood from the three assassins leaked bright red into the gray muck. I kicked each in a kidney to make sure they were all good and dead. Not a grunt among them. I noticed some of the resident sewer rats poking their heads out of their holes. A few of them were pointing feeders our way. The real story gives those high-definition cameras away to anyone who wants one. They keep the show's insatiable video feed streaming 24/7. It wouldn't do to have my face all over the basement, so I turned my back on the locals and knelt to get a closer look at the debtors. They wore blue coveralls, all right. Two men, one woman. Nothing particularly remarkable about them, except... I picked up a weapon caked in gray shit and turned it over. A stunner. A Mark II by the looks of it. The Mark IIs were still pre-market. No one was supposed to have them. I was still carrying the Mark I, and reluctantly at that. But this new model, no one was supposed to have these yet. Hell, I didn't even have one. That made me curiouser. I unzipped one of the fellow's coveralls. Underneath, he was wearing finer sweat catchers than a Martian factory worker could afford. I looked at his shoes. Same story. These guys weren't displaced resistance types a long way from home. These guys, and one gal, were professionals.
Mustafar's dead,
Darrow said behind me. I could tell by her voice that her eyes were getting wet.
And for what? Why?
That same desperate need to know from earlier. I glanced sideways over my shoulder. These guys weren't ghosts. I wrinkled a lip at the irony. There was a pause.
Why do you say that?
Too well-dressed, too well-armed. See these pieces? I gestured at the stunners laying in the sludge. Pre-market. Ghosts use the cast-off weapons they can scrounge from reclamation. No way they could get their hands on pre-market tech like this. I doubt these are even on the black market yet.
Maybe a patron?
He'd buy them silk undies, too? And these coveralls, they're thicker than you'd expect for factory grunts moonlighting as terrorists. A heavier weave. Dyed to look like Martian worker duds, but more than that. Something tickled the back of my brain. Multiple things, actually. Like puzzle pieces trying to fit together. Darrow peered over my shoulder.
I see what you mean.
The no-nonsense Marshall had displaced the grieving woman in her voice.
What's that?
What? She pointed at the neck of the woman lying next to the man I'd unzipped. I reached over and pulled the gal's collar down to get a better look. Huh. Those puzzle pieces seemed magnetized. They wanted to come together, but they weren't quite ready to yet.
Oh, what?
That's the Greek letter Epsilon. Darrow stared at me. You should read more, Marshall. I smirked. Epsilon is the Erkennen brand. All their operatives wear it tattooed on a body part. It's like their secret handshake. These assassins were on Rauf Erkennen's payroll. Well, that explained how they had access to the Mark IIs, since the Erkennens supplied the company's tech. Darrow's eyes dawned.
You mean the Erkennen faction sent a hit squad
to kill you? Yeah. I stopped there. She could do the rest herself.
To keep me from tracking down Blaylock. Because I wouldn't give up.
Dressed like ghosts, so any video that made it to the basement, I said, nodding to the ever more curious rats in their doorways, would make it look like the Resistance had hit the Marshall station. Two birds, one stone. The Erkennens stop you from messing in their business and the Resistance gets blamed, which makes SynCorp the victim. It's a headliner of a news story, tailor-made for CorpNet. I stood and cursed my cracking knees. The Erkennens had gone to a lot of trouble to shut down Darrow and her puppy dog lover, and didn't quite square with the risk they'd taken to do it. Sticking the Mark II in a coat pocket, I gave her a minute to think it all over, while I made the rounds to pick up the others' weapons. They wouldn't be needing them anymore, and I could resell them for a decent price after all this was over. Hell, maybe I'd start the black market for the Mark IIs.
Amin's dead.
Yeah, I said, not unkindly. I hate conversation as a rule. Sometimes I hate the silence more.
Because of me.
And sometimes silence is exactly what's called for.
They failed,
Darrow said. Failed? Well, yeah, you're still alive. Which reminded me, I looked around and, other than the eyes peering around corners, the corridor was empty. The service will send officers soon from up top. The first videos have probably already hit the basement. Wheels are in motion here, Darrow. We need to beat feet. The marshals that come now won't be your friends.
They failed,
she said, as if she hadn't heard a word I'd said.
Because I'm going after Blaylock anyway.
Darrow glanced back at the booth. I could see Mustafar's marshal-booted feet around the lip of the doorway, heels up.
Amin's death has to mean something.
Actually, it doesn't, I said. When she turned her flamers on me again, I tried not to feel bad. Hell, we don't even know where Blaylock is.
I do.
Darrow tossed it out like it wasn't the million-dollar answer to my prayers that it was. I pulled her off to the side of the corridor, hopefully out of earshot of any expensive sound-catching equipment being aimed our way by the basement trolls.
You know where Blaylock is? I whispered.